Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Time now for the DenverFan.com front page.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
Taking a look at the top stories in Denver sports, taken from your online home for the best opinions and information on the Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, Rockies, and more.
What in the name of Dan Issel?
With today's DenverFan.com front page, here's Schlereth and Evans.
News team, assist!
Let's get to some of the top stuff at DenverFan.com on the front page. And we've got Will Peterson writing about Nathaniel Hackett saying nobody's as frustrated as him when asked about the Broncos fans. And Will has a great line here. He says it's an old cliche, but perhaps an accurate one. While fans are livid, this is Hackett's job and reputation. His career with the Broncos looks destined to end after one season. His reputation around the NFL can't be great. From a personality standpoint, it's fine, but from a leadership and execution standpoint, things have gone horribly awry here in Denver. When I hear him talk every single week, he's saying the same things. We got to be better. We have to avoid these mistakes in the early downs. We have to find a way. We have to keep working at it. And what I hear is a guy who just doesn't know what the problem is and doesn't know how to fix it. You disagree with that.
Yeah, he knows what the problems are. Now, I agree with this part. He didn't know how to fix them. Now, part of the issue is, and this is a real issue, Mike. This is a real issue. When you have to play guys because you don't have enough depth because of injuries, then a guy makes a mistake, and you coach him up on the sideline, go, hey, man, we can't make that mistake. But where do you turn? Like, where do you turn? Like Courtland Sutton not having juice in and out of breaks and everything else, the guy never comes off the football field. Those guys, there's a part of that where you look at like how much rest do we give a guy, how much of a blow during a series can we give a guy? Like when you are struggling because you've had a bunch of injuries, that takes its toll on you too, because then you have to play guys. You want to play a guy at 90%, but you got to play them at 98%. Well, there's a difference there.
All right, so help me out. Are injuries a valid excuse here? All I'm told is you can't use injuries as an excuse, but the more we talk about this, the more like it sounds like you're saying, yes, it is an excuse.
I'm not ever going to use it as an excuse. There's a reason, but the problem is, again, now it comes down to coaching. It comes to the coaching part of it is, okay, we know this is an issue. The injuries are an issue. We know they're an issue. How do we get the best of our players? How do we adjust to give our guys an opportunity to be successful? What do we do? And Brock just talked about paring down the playbook and doing all those things. But at some point, you still have to execute. And guess what? If your receiver can't throw a block at the point, then make him the guy that catches it and put the tight end there at the point or whatever.
So this is the classic coach to what you got rather than what you would prefer.
Right. I mean, I'm watching a third down, and we'll get back into this, kind of the film breakdown, but I'm watching a third down where the two inside receivers run slants, and they basically run into each other. And the outside guys are running unders on a third down and nine. You complete it for a four-yard catch, and you got to punt again. Like that, from a design standpoint, the design is horrible. Like, there's a myriad of problems.
At DenverFan.com, Andrew Mason, our senior Bronco writer at DenverFan.com. Three numbers that stand out from Broncos Carolina. First, zero. Sacks, zero sacks in the game for the Broncos, which has become a bigger issue ever since the Bradley Chubb trade. For everyone who was like, hey, get rid of Bradley Chubb. Who cares? We don't need Bradley Chubb. Good riddance. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Really? All right. Since the trade, the Broncos have just two sacks in three games. It's the Broncos' worst three-game sack output since the first three games of Vic Fangio's tenure here. Here's a little another number for you. Before the Chubb trade, Denver averaged one quarterback hit every six pass plays. Now it's every nine plays. Before the trade, they had a sack every 12 pass plays. Now it's one sack every 47 pass plays. Bradley Chubb, all is forgiven. I was never a huge fan of this trade, but a lot of you couldn't wait for just a villain. Make Bradley Chubb the scapegoat and villain for everything.
Okay.
Well, by the way, he had a sack the other night for Miami.
Well, that's great.
That's great. You pat like, me on the head while you say that.
Right. Well, there's so many other factors that go into it. I'm not gonna, hey, you trade Bradley Chubb and he's a good player, but you know, you look at their last couple of games. I mean, they can't stop the run. Jacobs got 24 carries. Last week, between Hubbard and Foreman, they had 41 carries. You know how many legitimate opportunities you get to rush the passer on a weekend? You get about legitimate opportunities in a game that just goes the way you think it's going to go, right? You're getting no more than 15 legit opportunities where the ball's not out on a three-step, where it's not a swing pass, where it's not a bubble screen, you're getting about 15 opportunities to really legitimately rush the passer, where that's all you're doing is pinning your ears back. When you're giving up 41 carries for however many yards, you're not going to get to rush the passer. You're just not.
Well, this is another great number here from Mace.
All right.
in the game. 70.8, that was the percentage of snaps. Almost 71% of the snaps that Carolina had, they ran the football. That is the highest run percentage against the Broncos in over 14 years.
Mm.
How about that?
Yeah, well, you're not gonna get any opportunities to rush the quarterback. In a game like that, you earn the right to rush the quarterback by defending the run. That's how it works.
One more number.
Okay.
From Mace. 9. So there have been a lot of great statistics. Well, ugly statistics in explaining how bad this Broncos offense is. How about this one? This is awesome, but it's also sad. This is sad. The Broncos have one or zero touchdowns so far in 9 games.
This is sad.
One or zero.
Right. Okay.
According to ProFootballReference.com, this is the most one or zero touchdown games, okay, of any team through 11 games since 1978.
Inconceivable.
Just keeps getting worse.
I think we figured out what went on the sideline between Purcell and
just
Russell.
Getting worse.
Russell said, "Can you guys at least score? Can you guys score? We can't.
Right,
we like
right.
Hey." And it wasn't right. even. It wasn't even like. It wasn't meant to be derogatory toward the defense. He's like, "Can you guys please get a score? We can't over here.
Yes,
we cannot.
We need you to do more."
Yes, we need you guys to score so because we're just working on punting today.
That would be great.
Gosh.
Here's one at DenverFan.com, written by Will Peterson. He says the Broncos have replaced the Rockies as the most embarrassing team in Denver. Can we go there?
Well, I think part of that comes with expectations.
Right.
We don't expect the Rockies to do anything.
A lot of times, tonight it didn't happen.
But we just go to the Rockies to enjoy the sunshine, watch the sunset, and, you know, look at the other team. Like, there are actual expectations here for the Broncos. So I would say, yes, they're the most disappointing team.
Do you know that if you put our buddy Tom Green over at 9 News put this out, over the last 6 years, the Rockies have had a higher winning percentage than the Broncos in every one of the last 6 years?
No, God, please, no.
Wow.
You know what that means? We got to get Chris Bryant in a Bronco uniform.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't lose.
Oh, no, no, no. He would fit perfectly with this group. He'd be on IR instantly.
Yeah, that's right. He would be because
the Broncos announced that we've made another transaction today. Chris Bryant's been put on IR.
Is there a part of the business model, though, for the Rockies that the Broncos could adopt? Could we pay somebody to take Russell Wilson like we did with Arenado?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I got you. Right. I got you. Look, you can give us a 7th round draft pick.
Mm.
You take Russ, you take the contract, and we'll pay you an additional $50 million. Actually, I wonder if you can do that. I don't know. I doubt you can do that.
Can you?
Salary cap reasons and all. But.
Right. Can you pay, like, hey, listen, we'll pay half of his salary if you just take him. And then, you know, and then we go after a khaki pants guy and pay him next to nothing, and hopefully we can develop it.
Excellent!
It'd be a strategy. You never know.
You never know. But it's a good point. We'll it makes it interesting. The Rockies, I'm not embarrassed by the Rockies. I'm aggravated by the Rockies. They annoy me. They aggravate me. They frustrate me, but they do not embarrass me.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you're right, I have no expectations for them. I wish I had higher expectations for them,
but
and I'm annoyed with them that they don't do more so that we have higher expectations, so that I can't be embarrassed.
Mm-mm.
But the Broncos, we have high expectations. We had high expectations. We didn't think they'd go to the Super Bowl this year, but we definitely thought that they would be in the playoff, either in the playoffs or definitely in the playoff mix,
right
down to the end. So the fact that they are not and that they're losing the way they are, yeah, it's embarrassing. No, the Broncos are the most embarrassing team in Denver. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a good point. Could we find somebody that just to make us feel better that's more embarrassing than the Broncos?
Of the four teams? Or just something in just, general?
Colorado. I think we've pretty much established that we're the most embarrassing team of the four teams. Okay. So is there something else that
we
can
bring
be more
in the college teams, but that's not fair.
Right. I mean, we could be more embarrassed about what's going on up at CU, but at least, you know, they're going to try to get.
Yeah, at least
Deion
they're
Sanders
trying.
Or yeah. Something.
So, no. You can't bring in the college kids. So, no. The Denver Broncos. I'll throw it out on the text line.
Okay.
Is there something in Colorado
that's more embarrassing right now
than the Denver Broncos? Go. 303-713-1043.
I think you're going to get crickets.
I think people are going to be thinking long and hard and are going to have a hard time coming up with them.
Yeah.
We'll see what you come up with. Have some fun with that. That is what is going on at DenverFan.com, the Denver Fan front page. All kinds of great content that is constantly refreshed throughout the course of the day. So check that out. It's always free to you. I want to get back to Telestrator Tuesday because there was a lot that came out of this and we ran out of time. And I really want to revisit it because I gave you the homework assignment. Mm-hmm. I wanted you to go back and look at the Broncos' first game of the season against Seattle, in which they only scored 16 points, but it was a performance that left a lot of us feeling actually upbeat. Russell Wilson was 29 of 42 for 341 yards, a touchdown. He only got sacked twice. And so what I wanted to know was when you looked at the film of that game versus the film of the Carolina game, what stands out?
Well, yeah, I mean, we talked about this early. We talked about the fact
summarize.
Let me just give you a couple of just kind of, like you said, refreshers. So week one was a truly looked like a West Coast offense. There was a fullback, a tailback. You were under center. There was multiple tight end formations. You really formationed them to death. And then you set up your play action game. Like, Mike, there was so much good play action from under center. So from when you're under center, there's two things that happen. Ball handling becomes really important. So you take the snap, man, and when you go to hand that ball off, you dip your shoulders, you turn your back to the defense, you dip your shoulders, you know, you hide that ball, and the defense loses sight of you for a second, right? If they're playing zone, they just lose sight of you. Then all of a sudden you pop up and you're standing tall in the pocket, and whoom, you deliver a football. And there was a bunch of that worked out well. And the first read in that progression was open and Russell got it out to him. Like it was like a well-oiled machine from that standpoint. Now, sometimes those things got covered up. That's when he held the ball. It's when the initial read or the initial progression was covered, that's when he held the ball and he started to make a few things happen, and he and Courtland got on the same page. But there was a rhythm to the offense that no longer exists. There was an under-center element to the offense that helped that rhythm. And then the boot keep game was open. So all of a sudden, you're flagging that ball out, and then you're ripping your shoulders around, and there's real threat to the run. So then the ends are squeezing down, or they're maybe playing in tighter as opposed to being those wide nines. They're in a little bit tighter because they have to defend the run because you have to respect it. Now Russell's breaking outside. Bam, that first read. Or they ran, you know, the flat, and he gets to the flat. Then they run out and up. You know, they run the flat to the wheel. They turn in the wheel. They get that over the top. Like they make some easy throws and some chain-moving throws and some situations where first down, all of a sudden, you're in second down and four. You know, you're in second down and three. And their offense really clicked. None of that exists right now. Nobody is threatened by their run game. Therefore, those defensive ends on the backside are playing boot the whole time. Every time Russell Wilson tries a boot, there's somebody in his face taking away that throw. And then there's a couple things now that I look at in shotgun. There is no rhythm to Russell's feet in shotgun. And I go back to a conversation I've had with Kyle Shanahan, with Matt Ryan, about footwork and shotgun and how important it is to time up your footwork with the routes. And nothing times up. Like it just and here's the other thing. I've talked to other guys who have coached shorter quarterbacks. And in shotgun, there's a lot of basically three-step drops. Well, you're not even dropping. You're just like you're taking one shuffle step. And what ends up happening to you in those situations, Mike, is your routes and the time of your routes don't time up to your feet. Under center, everything times up to your feet. When I hit that third step, when I hit that fifth step, maybe it's three small steps and then two big steps, or two big steps and then three small, whatever it is, however they coach it up, it's to fit the timing of the route combinations. And there's no tie-in to Russell's feet and the throwing mechanics. So I think part of it is just there's a lack of rhythm in their offense in shotgun. What? And a lot of basically one step and now I'm set to throw out of shotgun. And one of the things that I've talked to about a couple of different coaches in shotgun in those situations where they have developed drops in gun for shorter quarterbacks, because when you don't take a drop and you're getting pressure on the inside, you can't see. So to get them away from the line of scrimmage a little bit. So there's a lack of rhythm in the gun where the feet don't feel like they time up to the route combination.
So the stuff that you saw in the opener against Seattle to what you're watching right now, why can't they do now what they were doing back in week one?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. You've had injuries to tight end. You don't have a fullback on your roster because Beck is your fullback. And so he's been injured, so he's been out, so you don't have that element of your offense. You know, none of the other tight ends you have really, really play that position. And could you develop? Could you put a Tomlinson in there to do that? I don't know. I mean, it feels like you could to me, but maybe you can't. So there is a part of that where you're missing that element of your roster. Then injuries to Jerry Jeudy, and I say what you want about Jerry Jeudy. I never thought I would say, man, do I miss Jerry Jeudy? But like Jerry Jeudy off the snap, he can get you separation, like instant separation. And you don't have that guy right now. Last week in Carolina, I don't know. I didn't count the number of man snaps they had. But there were a ton of man-to-man press looks right off the bat, whether it was single high or double high, because they ran them both. But it was man underneath. And there was a pure lack of respect for the passing game. They basically say, you can't beat us. You cannot beat us in man-to-man. You won't beat us in man-to-man. And they basically ate our lunch off the line of scrimmage?
Simple question for you.
Yeah.
Everything that you saw week one against Seattle from Russell Wilson in this offense, would you sign up for it? Meaning?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Meaning, would you roll with that? Would you feel comfortable rolling with what you saw in week one?
Absolutely, because that's something you can build an offense around. You can continue to build your offense.
All right, so this is not, hey, what happened to Russell Wilson when he was in Seattle? What happened to the Russell Wilson that you yourself called his last game as a Seattle Seahawk? You have that fresh in your memory.
No.
You have the Russell Wilson that you just watched back in week one as a Denver Bronco.
Right.
And you're telling me, I'll sign up for that today.
Right.
That Russell Wilson. So it's there. It's there.
Uh-huh.
But we're where we are right now. And how do we get back to that? And it's a mess right now. But do you come away from your homework assignment feeling maybe a little bit more optimistic about what this guy and what this offense still could be? Because you don't have to go back to his days in Seattle to find examples of it. You can go back to the first game of this year as a Bronco.
Do I feel optimistic? I guess I feel optimistic that you can do that. But will this coaching staff do that? And why has it changed so much? Is it just personnel, or is it you acquiesced to something that the quarterback wanted? I don't know the answer to that question. My question would be, do you have, and let me be crass, do you have balls enough to say this is what we're going to do? And I don't give a rip. You don't like it, you don't have to play. Like, that's what I would, that's what I'd ask my quarterback. And I don't know that you have a coaching staff that has the onions to do that.
There it is, the jingle. Be the fourth caller right now at 303-713-1043 to win a $50 gift card to Cherry Creek Shopping Center and be qualified for the grand prize of a $1,000 shopping spree thanks to Santa's little helpers. Well, one of them's little. Stokely and Zach, one true little helper.
Yeah.
The other's kind of tall.
He is tall.
Lanky. But you do have one little helper.
You're tiny. Ask Peyton. Peyton will tell you he's a little helper.
Caller 4 right now, 303-713-1043. Good luck. Oh, I want to get more into what you saw, the comparisons between week one, more of Telestrator Tuesday, and Nathaniel Hackett. I'm going to ask the question that I think everybody in Broncos country is still asking. Why is he still here? That's next.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
It's time for Schlereth and Evans' Big Story of the Day.
Fine, it's just that you're so big.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with this morning's biggest story in Denver sports.
Big is big. Big is huge.
You know me, I'm a helpless romantic, a hopeless optimist.
Yes.
And I've actually, with this little Telestrator Tuesday homework assignment I gave you, I'm actually feeling better, not great, but better about the future of Russell Wilson here in Denver. Because when you say you've gone back and looked at the film of not last year, Russ, we're not talking about Russ in Seattle. We're talking about Russ as a Denver Bronco without any preseason, going right into week one against Seattle and playing a way, a style with a, and by the way, I looked at the same game. I didn't look at it from an X's O standpoint. I leave that to you. All I looked at was I looked at body language. I just wanted to look at his body language compared to that game versus what I'm watching right now. Night and day.
Yeah.
That guy had swagger. That guy had confidence. That guy had an energy about him.
Uh-huh.
This guy I'm watching now looks
lost.
He looks lost. He's seeing ghosts. He has zero confidence out there, zero swagger. No, body language is awful. And so the fact that you say after watching the film on week one, that's a Russell Wilson, that's an offense that you'd sign up for today, I feel hopeful.
Will
feel hopeful that he's not washed.
Yeah, no, I don't. He's there's definitely a lack of confidence, and I'm with you on the body language part of this thing. Like, he is not. He's got horrible body language, and there is a lack of confidence there that you can definitely, it's palpable. You can see that on film. Just like, you know, it's the opposite. I called Washington this weekend. The opposite of the way they have responded to Taylor Heinicke in Washington. Like, that body language is strong.
Yep.
And those guys have responded to that guy's play. You look at every statistical category, Carson Wentz is better in every category. He's got more touchdowns. He's got, you know, he's got a better completion percentage. He's got, like, he's got more yards rushing. Like, you wouldn't expect that. He's obviously taking a bunch more sacks, but you wouldn't expect that. You look at Russell Wilson, and there is a lack of confidence that you can just, I mean, it just oozes off film. Oozes off film. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of blame to go around, from not blocking guys, not protecting very well, not running the ball very well, not getting open and beating man-to-man coverage, Russell predetermining where he wants to go with the football and just locking on to one guy the whole entire, you know, route, even though that dude is double covered. Like, there's a lot that you would look at that goes into that.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Let's play a game. Okay. I know you love games.
Mm-hmm.
You instantly get, like, this childlike look on your face.
Yeah.
So the more I hear from you, the more that I'm buying the idea that injuries are an excuse. And no matter how much you want to say,
not an excuse,
all
a
right,
reason.
But it's a significant reason.
Okay.
Significant reason as to why they're in the mess that they're in. I'm going to let you wave your magic wand.
Okay.
Expecto Parento.
Expecto Patronum.
Okay, here we go. You can have one injured guy from this offense back today. Who would it be and why? You got Javonte Williams. You got Tim Patrick. You got Jerry Jeudy. You got Garrett Bowles.
I came from the mud.
Who would it be?
Who would it be? You got Kush.
Right.
Who would it be?
If I had to get one guy back, and I would probably take this guy simply because I think he's a damn good football player, and I think he's got a bit of the red ass. I believe that he'll get after some people, and that would be Tim Patrick.
Wow. I had a feeling. I thought it was going to be him or Garrett Bowles. Okay.
Yeah.
Tim Patrick. Interesting. A wide receiver.
Well, yes, and for all the reasons I told you, I think he's a bit of a hard ass, and he's a damn good football player, and he's not special athletically, but he's a special competitor, and I just feel like you get a quarterback and you think there's going to be that leadership for whatever reason. And I think Russell works exceptionally hard, and I think he studies hard, and I think he's getting the guys for extra reps.
I know where you're going with this.
All that stuff.
He's not a real leader.
But guys just don't follow. No. The guys just don't follow him.
No.
He just doesn't inspire anybody.
No, you're right.
And they need an inspirational figure. They need somebody on the offensive side. Like, there should be something going on the offensive side of the ball. Like what we saw with Mike Purcell on Sunday, there should be something on the offensive side of the ball that is like that. You know, you saw a week ago or so, and I don't know why exactly it made the rounds, but you saw the Peyton Manning, Jeff Saturday blow up on the sideline, right? Just dog cussing one another. And then Peyton sits down next to Stoke and goes, I'm wired. Like, I'm wired for this game. Like,
yeah.
You know he wasn't thinking about it
either.
He was just...
This might come back to haunt me,
yeah,
and it has.
It was just that there was an inspiration there, and there was a passion there that it means something to all those guys. It means something to Jeff Saturday. It means something to Peyton Manning. And you know, and part of that is, and I always talk about this, the empathy that you need to have for how tough other people's jobs are. And like, you're injured up front, you're struggling up front. You have to know how hard it is to drop back 45 times during a game when you got a bunch of backups playing. Good coaches mitigate that. Bad coaches hope that nothing bad happens. And I feel like there's part of me that just feels like we're more on the hope train right now than we are on the let's mitigate disaster train.
Quick text for you here.
Okay.
Wow, I used to think Mark was tough and no nonsense, but the excuses coming from him. Come on, it's injuries, boo-hoo. Obviously, you have no clue anymore. Go and get your man card back.
I said it wasn't.
I'm actually the one saying that maybe we need to take these injuries more seriously as a genuine reason why. I think we're so callous, it's such a knee-jerk reaction that it's a weakness to use injuries as an excuse. Can't use injuries as an excuse. Next man up. Go with what you got. Well, you know what? At some point, you just don't have anybody left to turn to.
Yeah.
And at some point, on a roster that had already seen a lot of deterioration over the last 6 years, you just weren't constructed in a way to be able to withstand the kind of injuries that they've had, especially with all the newness. Let's talk more about that. I've got a response. Because I think at some point it is a reason, and it is a valid excuse, and it's not something that we should just immediately dismiss and roll our eyes at. All right, we'll discuss that next.
Body language. Body language.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hope everyone's driving safely. We asked, what's a bigger embarrassment than the Broncos right now in the state of Colorado? We got a lot of these out-of-state drivers who don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, well,
that's embarrassing, but still not as embarrassing as the Denver Broncos.
Correct. Denver Broncos are very, very embarrassing right now.
Below not good.
Yes, not good.
Been chopping it up with all the Telestrator Tuesday stuff, and your assignment was go back and look at the opening game of the season against Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Compare Russ and this offense to what you just saw the other day against Carolina. And the differences are stark, night and day, which actually gives me a little bit of hope for moving forward. Because, look,
I'm glad you have
it. Because the conversation is out there, and it's a fair conversation to have. This guy is toast. This guy is washed. We got sold a lemon. But I will remind people, we had Brock Huard on earlier, and he said, look, Seattle may have had some issues and some concerns about where Russ was going, but nobody in Seattle, nobody in the Seahawks organization thought he'd be this bad.
Right.
Nobody thought he was going to look this bad. They did not see this coming.
Yes.
So, here's the thing. If we're tied to this guy for at least another couple of years, I'll admit, I'm not shy to admit. I'm looking for any reason to believe that there could be something that we can salvage this. And the fact that you could go back and look at that first game against Seattle, not as a Seahawk, but as a Bronco, and say, yeah, hey, there was a lot there from Russ and from this offense that I would absolutely sign up for as what I'm going to get with this offense and get from Russ and then build on. So at least it's there. Now the question is, why are we at where we're at now? And I think we do have to talk about injuries. I know people don't like to hear it. It's considered a cop-out. Heck, for years I've said, don't give me injuries. Everybody has injuries. But at some point, you do run out of guys. At some point, you're asking guys to do things that they're not able to do.
Correct.
And let's add to it, I'm not leaving Hackett and the coaching staff off the hook here.
Mm-hmm.
Your coaching staff should coach these guys up so that they can step in when other guys get injured. But that hasn't happened. So I, for all those reasons, you got to look at injuries as an excuse.
Yeah. I think here's where I would go with this, Mike. You know, there's the old saying, it's more about the Jimmys and Joes than it is the X's and O's. Got to have Jimmys and Joes. And so when all your Jimmys and Joes are hurt, when you're minus your starting left tackle, you're minus your starting center, you know, you haven't developed or you're minus your starting right tackle, the guy that you thought was going to be the guy in Billy Turner, you're minus your starting right tackle, you're minus a starting wide receiver, you're minus a starting kind of quote-unquote fullback in Beck. You're minus, like that's just on the offensive side. You know, you're minus your other starting receiver in Jerry Jeudy. You're minus your speed guy on the outside in KJ Hamler. Like, you're like that's a lot of minuses. So there's a lot of Jimmy and Joes out. When you have that many Jimmy and Joes out, then you know what you have to be able to do? Out X and O people. So they're in this terrible catch 22 of we're minus a bunch of Jimmys and Joes, and by the way, we can't out-scheme anybody with what we've got. And that's where you sit right now. Like, I know I don't like it. I'm not an injury guy. I'm not one of those that, oh, you know, we've had injuries so we can't. I don't buy that. But this is real.
Oh, by the way, please do not take what I'm saying as me saying, hey, this is the reason why Nathaniel Hackett should be given a pass and Nathaniel Hackett and this entire coaching staff should be back next year. No. This coaching staff has clearly shown that they are in over their head.
Correct.
Yeah. But I'm looking at it more from the standpoint of how do we salvage Russ? That's all that matters now. And I'm going to take from today's show, from Telestrator Tuesday, the fact that, hey, there were enough things that happened in week one that can give you reason to believe this guy can still play. If the circumstances are right, if sure. The coaching is good, if the Jimmys and Joes are there, that this guy can still play.
I would say to that, absolutely, Mike. But when you have that many injuries, you're going to have to, and we talked to Brock Huard, you're going to have to simple things down. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to pare down part of your playbook. That's just part of it. And that's okay. But you got to execute those things. You got to execute the simple things. I mentioned the first play of the game. You're motioning into a bunch formation where you're running just a bubble screen. It was to Washington, by the way. I think I said
Hinton
earlier. Yeah. No, Hinton was the point. So Hinton's the blocker that missed the block.
Yeah, but Washington was the guy that was the intended receiver.
Yeah, I think I said who's the tight end? 80. His name's escaping me right now.
Tomlinson.
No.
Dulcich.
Yeah.
Dulcich. Not Dulcich. Dulcich.
Catch some touchdowns, then you become Dulcich. Dulcich.
Then you become Dulcich.
Yeah.
Until
right now
you're
Dulcich. You're Dulcich until you score a touchdown.
Then you're Dulcich.
Then you'll be Dulcich.
Right.
Then I'll say your name correctly.
Right.
Right now, no. You have not earned it.
You have not earned the right for Mark to say your name correctly.
That's right.
Till then, Mark's going to say what's comfortable for Mark.
Right, exactly. I'm going to use Markisms until that point. So it was Washington, but like, first play of the game, you get, I mean, it's a blow up on, you know, I mean, I get it. It's, you got to block. I mean, I get that, you know, blocking is not easy. I tell you this all the time. It's not easy. It's footwork, it's hands. But you got to execute those things. So you simple things down and you still screw things up? Unacceptable.
And by the way, I'm not leaving Russ out of this as well, because you're right. They do have to simple things down. And your quarterback has to be fully on board with the idea of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure he is.
Yeah, I would think at this point you're so stuffed full of humble pie. I would think.
You would think.
That you would say, hey, whatever we got to do, let's do it.
Right. Correct.
But that's me.
Nice job. No, seriously, I give you grief, but I know you're insanely busy right now. But thank you. Telestrator Tuesday, I think, was a huge success. I think the other shows will be talking about it. And I do want to throw this question out to the other hosts on the station, because I think it's an interesting one. If you could have one of the injured offensive guys back, just one, wave a magic wand, and he's back, healthy, who would it be? You surprised me a little bit when you said Tim Patrick. And you know what? Tim Patrick was the first domino to fall, wasn't it? That was the first injury.
Yeah.
And talk about a harbinger of things to come. We're done. Drive safe, everybody. The Players Club is coming your way next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.